This is HEC Media.
Welcome to Talking with Authors. I'm your host, Rod Milam. Throughout all of our podcasts, we'll be speaking with a variety of best-selling authors spanning many genres, authors like Judy Blume, Brad Meltzer, Janet Napolitano, and so many more. HEC Media is a production company out of St. Louis, Missouri, and with the help of independent bookstore Left Bank Books and the St. Louis County Library, we are able to sit down with amazing writers and thought leaders to discuss their work, their inspiration, and what makes them special. Also, you can watch video versions of most of these interviews by going to hecmedia.org. Today, our author is journalist and writer Alexis Clark. She sat down with us for a discussion in July of 2018 at the Goldfarb School of Nursing at Barnes Jewish College in St. Louis, Missouri. Now, why did we interview Ms. Clark at a nursing school? Because the extremely unlikely nonfiction story that she researched and published, Enemies in Love, tells the tale of a World War II-era Black American Army nurse and her relationship with a captured German POW in the United States while hostilities were still going on.
So I stumbled across this book called GI Nightingales, and it was all about the Army Nurse Corps in World War II. And apparently this author sent out a questionnaire to nurses. Eleanor Powell, the nurse in my book, responded and included just a little tidbit. It said, "The war offers fond memories for Eleanor, who met and later married a German prisoner of war in Arizona."
And the story of how these two people that would never have met if not for the extremes in the societies on both sides of that war is what we'll hear about from our guest, journalist and writer Alexis Clark, on Talking with Authors from HEC Media and HEC Books. Here's our host, Paul Shankman.
Welcome to St. Louis. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Well, the book is terrific. It was a really good, interesting, and fun, fast read. And a lot of stuff in there I didn't know anything about. There's a lot to unpack here. But I just want to start right from the beginning with the subtitle, Enemies in Love, A German POW, A Black Nurse, and an Unlikely Romance. I think you're underselling it.
Just a little.
Unlikely? How about unbelievable?
Right, you're right. This incredible.
This is incredible. A story of an African-American nurse in the 1940s, World War II, and a German POW, and they became a couple. Amazing. How did you first hear about this story?
Well, so I am very interested in World War II history, but actually I was having just a casual conversation with my mom over dinner, and I discovered I was a distant relative of Colonel Charles Young. And he was the highest ranking African American in the military until his death in 1922. So I just got the bug. I just started reading about blacks in the military. So I stumbled across this book called GI Nightingales, and it was all about the Army Nurse Corps in World War II. And there was a brief chapter on black women who served. And I didn't know that. I knew about the WACs, but I didn't know they were in the Army Nurse Corps. And apparently this author sent out a questionnaire to black nurses. Eleanor Powell, the nurse in my book, responded and included just a little tidbit. It was just one sentence. It said, "The war offers fond memories for Eleanor, who met and later married a German prisoner of war in Arizona." So I'm just like, time out, what?
Wait, what?
Exactly. So I contacted the author. I'm like, what happened? How do I contact her? She's like, I never met her. This is an interesting factoid. So I just knew I had to unpack that history.
Well, you didn't have much to go on to begin with.
I didn't, but Eleanor has unique spelling of her name, and then she also included where she was from, and I knew her age, and I could get the roster of black nurses in the war. So that, as a journalist, I had the papers and some documents, and I just started digging.
There are so many different stories that kind of veer off of this. But starting with Eleanor, she was an exceptional person and in an exceptional position, I think, for her time, because she was living up north in, relatively...
They were upwardly mobile African-American family, which was very uncommon. And it's funny, she was from Milton, Massachusetts, which was a very progressive suburb outside of Boston. And Boston, as we know, has had some volatile racial history. But in this conclave, she grew up with white friends, went to white schools. Her parents did very well. So she was largely shielded from discrimination growing up.
Until she got into the United States Army.
Until she decided to serve her country. That's when she was confronted with Jim Crow.
That must have just shocked her.
It was very difficult. It was hurtful and humiliating. She had a tough time throughout the Army experience.
And Jim Crow in Arizona. We don't normally think of Arizona when we think of that sort of thing.
I know. And it was pervasive in the South, the Southwest, on the West Coast. So it's not just the Deep South that had segregated facilities. They were actually throughout the United States.
It's interesting the way you lay out the book. I would guess it was about halfway through the book before the two of them actually meet.
We
learned about Eleanor and about Frederick separately. Talk about Frederick a little bit.
So Frederick was born in Germany, but mostly raised in Vienna, and he was from a very wealthy family. His father was a prominent engineer, created this fireproofing material that was heavily used in some of the Hitler's army and the construction of various things. And his father served in the Great War, and they were German nationalists. They were believers in Hitler. Frederick, on the other hand, was conscripted. He was not a military guy. He was not a follower of Hitler. He was actually more of a Renaissance man, painter. He loved to cook. He loved to be outside. But he had to be in the army or face the consequences. So that's what happened.
I guess he wasn't very good at it because he got captured.
He was captured very quickly. He didn't share many details about his capture, but what we do know is that it happened in Italy, and then he was shipped over the United States along with 390,000 German POWs as well, which I didn't know either.
Yeah, and that's another fascinating story that people are probably going to go, wait, there were POWs in the United States from the enemy?
Exactly. Starting in 1942, between 1942 and 1946, and it really makes sense now when I delved into the history, because there were so many American men away that you had all this unskilled labor that was being neglected. So you had farms that were neglected, canneries, plants, and the labor force was suffering. And so under the Geneva Convention, the detaining power, they can take their captured soldiers and make them work. And so the United States, they would capture Germans in Europe and Northern Africa and ship them to the United States. And they were scattered in camps.
So our two central characters here are really sort of outliers for their time. A German who's in the army but not really into Hitler.
Exactly.
And an African-American woman who really hasn't experienced much prejudice.
Yes.
And then they meet.
They meet.
How did they meet?
It's a great story, really. So apparently, Frederick, his assignment was to work in the mess hall because he was a great cook and an excellent baker. And this is what he shared with his children and his and other family members. He said he saw her when she walked in, and it's like he was under a spell. And he walked right up to her and said, "You should know my name. I'm the man who's going to marry you."
He obviously spoke English.
Yes, very well. And that was pretty common with someone of his background and education level. So he was fluent, which was an advantage for him as well.
Do we know what Eleanor thought when he said that?
She was flabbergasted and very amused, too, because here she was actually in Arizona, and she was on the receiving end of some terrible discrimination, and not only from local residents, from fellow white officers. And so to be flattered, I mean, I guess she would take it from anyone, so she was really amused, and then some flirtation started to develop.
Well, and a German POW, too, is not just the question of being prejudiced. I mean, you know, the Aryan master race theory, they were killing people.
Right. Well, that's what was so shocking about this assignment, to put black women in direct contact with German prisoners of war. And what I learned, and this was actually from Eleanor in this previous book, the commanding officer approached her unit and said, "We're shipping you to a German POW camp," because they were concerned with all the fraternization that was taking place between the white nurses and the German POWs. So they said, okay, we'll send in these black nurses, and then there won't be any problems. And so that became an overwhelming assignment for black nurses throughout World War II. They were either taking care of German prisoners or at segregated bases where there were black soldiers.
At one point, there's even a nursing shortage, and the Army won't
I
see
know.
Their way to...
And that it just shows you how entrenched discrimination and racism was then. So there was an ongoing nursing shortage throughout World War II. And then when you had so many returning American men wounded, there was a threat of a nursing draft. Even in January of 1945, FDR, in his State of the Union, says that there might be a nursing draft if we don't get any more volunteers. Meanwhile, thousands of black nurses, on record there were 9,000 who had applied and their applications were denied. And they had comparable credentials. But this is just where we were, where the American military, and I think society at large, didn't want to see black women in uniform. So a very small number actually served. And that's another big tragedy.
We know that Eleanor was treated poorly by the people in that area. What about Frederick? How were the POWs treated?
Well, that was another part of the history that was shocking to me. So in a lot of the cases, they were treated very well. Actually, compared to blacks in uniforms, they were treated better. I uncovered in some of my archival research, particularly in the NAACP, there are many letters by black soldiers and black nurses. And there's this one particular troubling anecdote. It was in Texas, and it was at a train depot. And the black soldiers couldn't go into the dining room. But the German POWs and their American guards went right into the dining room, sat down, ate, had their cigarettes, and the black soldiers in a U.S. military uniform had their faces pressed to the glass because it was whites only.
Sad chapter.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. So Frederick tries his pickup line on Eleanor.
Yes.
And apparently she buys it.
She does.
And they get together. In fact, they get together quite a bit in the book. I'm interested, though, there was obviously this physical attraction between them. But what did they see in each other that bonded them to do more than just...
Right. I definitely was beyond physical attraction. I think they both saw a need in each other. So about, you know, a little bit more about Frederick's background. So he was estranged from his father. He always yearned for his father's respect. But his father was like, you're into painting, you're not a man's man. So they didn't have a relationship at all. So he had low self-esteem, to be honest. And so when he met Eleanor, she needed him. And so she kind of fulfilled all those yearnings that he didn't have growing up. Like, here was someone who absolutely adored him and looked forward to seeing him and always wanted to talk to him, because she herself felt so isolated too, given the discrimination she was feeling. So they really sought solace in each other under those circumstances.
Did they have any hesitation about developing this romance from the point of view, from a couple of points of view, really?
Right.
One, I suppose it could be treasonous if somebody found out.
Oh, absolutely.
For Eleanor. And also that eventually the war would end and he would be gone.
I mean, I think it was youthful rebellion. I think they also were madly in love. But they were taking major risks. I mean, here you are, have an American nurse in the army, and he's in Hitler's army. So we are enemies at war. So she could have been court-martialed had their romance been discovered. And also, it's a collision of Jim Crow and Nazism. Even though we're at war, these are two countries that have racialized laws. So they both were committing crimes. So you really think about, wow, they erased all of that. And so I think, yes, it was, they're young, they're rebellious, but they also hated what their countries were putting forth and selling this racism, because that's not what were in their hearts either.
And there probably weren't too many people who had the same experiences, background, attitudes in the Army. The fact that they would find each other is pretty amazing.
I think so too, because they really weren't ever supposed to be with each other when you think about that time period.
Well, really, it's called enemies in love, but right. They weren't on that level enemies at all. It seems like the enemies were their own countrymen and women.
I agree. Yeah, that's an excellent point. Yeah. Sure.
Coming up later, we'll hear more about the unusual story of Eleanor Powell and Frederick Albert. And we'll hear about how our journalist/author Alexis Clark approached researching and presenting this material that had little chance of coming to light without a lot of digging.
First of all, I wanted to tell this compelling narrative. I mean, this is a beautiful love story, but there's so much history that I wanted to unpack as well. I think I was objective with it, but at the same time, I have no problem saying that I'm against racism. So there are certain times where, you know, I think being opinionated is good.
All of that coming up when Talking with Authors continues from HEC Media.
Educate Today offers an ever-growing library of the highest quality video resources, curriculum materials, and interactive programs, all of which are designed to challenge thinking, inspire creativity, and empower learning of students, educators, parents, and lifelong learners. And you can find out more about all these programs by going online to educate.today. That's educate.today.
So the war ends, mm-hmm. and they inevitably are going to be split up when they send Frederick back to Germany. Yeah. How did they decide to stay back together?
The big secret. Well, again, we're talking about some very young, headstrong people. So believe it or not, they figured, okay, the best way, the smartest way for Frederick to return to the United States is if they conceived a child. And they did. That's exactly what they did. And you really think about that because, wow, that meant she was going to be a single mother impregnated by a German soldier who then has to leave because all the POWs were deported. I mean, that was just part of the law. So she was going to have to return home unwed and pregnant. But they believed in their love, and she was willing to risk that. And that's exactly what happened.
Did she tell people that that was...
No. Not and basically, and from records and anecdotes, and actually from a nurse who I was able to meet, she was at the POW camp with Eleanor and Frederick. She didn't share this secret at all. And if she was showing, she covered it up with whatever, probably a nurse's jacket, because she was discharged in 1946. And her son was born in December 1946. So, you know, her mother knew, obviously, when she showed up. And that was a very difficult time for them.
So thanks to having the son, he was able, I guess, to get sponsorship
yes,
to come
exactly.
back.
Yes, exactly. So Eleanor was able to vouch for him and actually some of her nursing friends. So they had to prove housing, proof of income, that he was not going to be a drain on our social services. And he was able to return a year later. And they married in June 1947, 20 years between before the Loving v. Virginia decision.
Where did they marry?
In New York. Courthouse in New York.
About the only place probably at that time
because there were quite a number of states where it was still against the law for blacks and whites to marry, but in New York that wasn't the case, which is why they chose it.
So they stayed in the United States for a while, but that wasn't going so hot.
No, it wasn't.
Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise. I mean, it's post-World War II. We still have a lot of discrimination in this country, and now you have a black woman, her German husband, who was a former soldier in Hitler's army, and they have a mixed-race son. And American society wasn't ready for it. So they struggled. They moved to Boston, but they struggled getting housing. No one wanted to give them a lease. He struggled finding employment, just taking odd jobs. And so they knew something was going to... They'd have to make a decision. They couldn't live like this. And they decided to move to Germany, since he was groomed to take over his father's lucrative business.
That didn't work out so great either.
No. Can you imagine? What could go wrong?
Right. I mean, they were seen, and particularly Eleanor, as I think you make the point in the book, almost like an animal in the zoo.
That's
like
how she felt.
Sort of curiosity.
People were pointing at her, gawking at her. Even some were yelling racial slurs. There was this one moment where she was just walking on a very common street, and this man drops his groceries. It's like his vegetables roll down the street. It's like he's seeing a ghost. He can't believe it because it was so unheard of to have African Americans in some of these German towns, and that's where they moved to a smaller university town. So that didn't go well, and she also she wasn't welcomed by his parents.
Yeah, she had the mother-in-law from hell.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, that was a very difficult year and a half that they were in Germany.
So they came back to the United States.
That's what they did. So they would move. That's the way they made it. So if things got bad, they would just pick up and move. So they started off in the suburbs of Philadelphia. That didn't work out too much. They had to move again. They couldn't enroll their son in the school of their choice because he was black. But then Frederick takes off and goes to baking school, which ends up being a blessing because they keep moving, but after he finishes, he gets a job with Pepperidge Farm in Connecticut. And that's when they start seeing some more stable a more stable lifestyle.
They had a family, but in addition to the one son, there are other children.
Now they're two. Now they have two sons.
I'm wondering, in the midst of all this, I don't want to sound like Spencer Tracy at the end of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, but did they give any thought to, you know, what this was going to be like for their children? They had a hard enough time as it was.
Surprisingly, no. That's some criticism that Chris and Stephen, those are their sons, and even their other relatives, they just thought that they were so naive. And so they didn't even talk about being a mixed race couple. It wasn't a thing. It's almost like they were trying to raise themselves and their whole family in this colorblind bubble. So they didn't address civil rights. They just moved. When things didn't work out and they found out that they weren't welcomed in an environment, they left. They didn't really stick around and fight. And later on in life, that was a problem for their kids who had some identity issues in their teen years.
And when you talk about a bubble, they actually, if there was a bubble out there somewhere, they found it.
They did. They found actually the perfect place, just an hour north of New York City in Norwalk, Connecticut. It's called Village Creek. And even in their covenants, they advertised itself as a prejudice-free zone. And so they welcomed mixed-race couples, artists, gays, Jewish families, groups that had been discriminated against. And they found this paradise. And they settled there and lived there until they passed away.
How did you research this? Because most of, obviously, the two main characters were no longer with us.
I know.
Was it just talking to family? Were there records someplace?
It was everything you can imagine. I mean, first of all, I wanted to tell this compelling narrative. I mean, this is a beautiful love story, but there's so much history that I wanted to unpack as well. So regarding I took it in chunks, like the black nurses, I was able to track down a few that were still alive, but then I relied on a lot of archives of black nurses. There's a research center in Howard University, the Library of Congress, the National Archives, just coming through all these documents. And then talking to professors who actually teach World War II history, teach military history. So I spoke to the experts, and then I spoke to relatives, I spoke to neighbors, and then I would do that over the course of a few years.
Now the sons, did you speak to both or only just one?
I met both, of course, but there was really one that I had to rely on because the older son, Stephen, didn't want to be a part of the research. It's too painful for him, surprisingly. I mean, even he's in his 70s now, but he remembers everything and the painful memories, and he just didn't want to go there. I tried so hard to convince him, but it didn't work. So I just had to rely on Chris, who was great.
He just openly shared.
I mean, Chris is in his early 60s, so he remembers everything. And he doesn't sugarcoat any of his dad's behavior, any of their parents' marriage. He's very open about it, but he also is fascinated too. I mean, he realizes his parents were really brave.
What's the reaction been to the book? I imagine people are as surprised as you were about just this whole story.
Yes, I mean, it's been great. They're surprised, they're fascinated, they're intrigued. I mean, this is uncovering a lot of history that they didn't know about as well. So that was the goal of this book. And they're also completely in love with Eleanor and Frederick because their story is so unusual.
Yeah. And along with the public reaction, what was the reaction of the family?
Chris liked it. And I was so, that was like the first thing, that's the son, the younger son. I was so nervous because it can't be easy to have some outsider write about your family, particularly your parents' marriage, because I do get pretty personal in the book. But he said he was in awe of the research and that he liked it. And I was just so relieved by that. And then I heard from neighbors. And then actually in a couple of weeks, I've been invited to speak at the library in Norwalk, in that community. And then also in Milton, Massachusetts, where Eleanor is born, I've been invited to speak there too. So that's also validates my work. So I'm very encouraged by that.
Even having the family members to speak to, were there a lot of questions in your mind that were still unanswered about this that you couldn't find an answer for, but you tried?
Well, sure. I mean, Eleanor and Frederick were of a generation that really didn't share a lot of their painful moments with their children. I think we're a lot more open now. So there were questions that I thought would have been obvious. I mean, Chris didn't talk about Hitler with his father. I'm thinking to myself, how did you guys not talk about it? But they left painful memories and put them in the past. And that's how they I guess, survived, really. So I had tons of questions, but it's just not there. You know, and I wanted to write a completely nonfiction book, so I didn't want to take liberties of how I thought they would have responded.
Well, I'm glad it's getting such a positive response from the public. It's a wonderful book. Is there a movie?
I get that question a lot. So my agent is getting calls, but right now we still haven't sealed the deal with anyone. But I think it would be a beautiful, compelling story on screen. That is my goal, and I hope that happens soon.
Have you already got it cast in your mind?
That's a fun question. I have some favorites, I do, but I'm open. So I was thinking first for Eleanor. I like Kerry Washington. I also like the actress Condola Rashad. If you watch Billion, she's great. She's also a fantastic Broadway actress. And I was thinking for Frederick, Michael Fassbender. But who knows? I mean, the tricky part is, it's funny, Eleanor was 23 and Frederick was 19 when they met. They were so young, you know, and it's like, I think about what they endured, I automatically put them as older, especially when you think about, gosh, he was in the battlefield at 19, you know. But I think those actors, even though they're older, they'd work.
What's the experience been like for you, having put this book together and now going around the country and meeting people who've read it?
I love it. It's great. I get great questions. People seem to be fascinated by the topic. And that's what every writer wants.
You probably had to leave a lot out, I would imagine.
I did, because for one, this is a nonfiction book, but I wanted it to be more towards the narrative nonfiction. I really wanted this love story to drive the narrative. I didn't want something that was so dense and so academic that you lose the reader. I wanted the reader to connect with Eleanor and Frederick. And I think they did.
I noticed on your Twitter feed you call yourself an opinionated Southern Belle, I believe is the way it was put.
That's true.
As a journalist, of course, you're not supposed to insert your opinion into a story. Was that difficult for you in doing this book, or did you allow yourself some room to do that?
I tried to really allow this Eleanor and Frederick just gather the information as much as I could. I think I was objective with it, but at the same time, I have no problem saying that I'm against racism. So there are certain times where, you know, I think being opinionated is good.
You started this book a number of years ago. It took a long time to research, obviously. That said, do you think that the fact that it's coming out now in the times we seem to find ourselves in makes it even more important for people to read this?
I think so. I mean, there is something painfully current about this book. Well, we already know there's a rise of neo-Nazis. I mean, that's going on. You wouldn't really think that, I mean, Nazis would be kind of like a current subject, but it is right here in the United States, so that's unfortunate. I think mixed race couples, we have evolved, but you still have reactions in a population of people who don't approve of that. And I love that this story shows that more than 70 years ago, there are people in this world who are like, no, I'm not going to decide who I'm going to spend the rest of my life with just based on skin color. But that's still, racism is still an issue. So there are themes in this book that we're still grappling with today.
What do you hope people take away from it?
Well, I hope that they appreciate the history. I hope they are inspired by the story of these courageous black nurses. And then I also hope that they're inspired by Eleanor and Frederick's courage. I think that there are several themes in this book. They're brave, they're courageous, they're honorable. And even though they move a lot, there are some moments where she, in this one point, where she does talk about discrimination. So I think she's forthcoming in some of her confrontations. So that's important. I think people have to speak up, really, because if you don't speak up, it's like your silence is to me a sign of approval.
Do you think if they would have met somehow later in life, older, they would have gone ahead and gotten together, or was this sort of a moment of youth?
I think youth was on their side for sure. And not that you're young, that you're not thoughtful, but I do think there is something, just there is more wisdom and more fear as you get older. You know what this world can be like. So I think it helped them that they hadn't experienced that much of life yet.
Well, and it was wartime, too, and I would imagine that in World War II, people probably thought, you know, something could drastically upset the world order. We don't
know
what's going to happen.
That's true.
Live for today.
Yeah, you're probably right, because they really they had no idea what was going to happen, how that war was going to end, really.
Well, the book is Enemies in Love, and it's terrific. And Alexis Clark, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
New York City-based journalist and writer Alexis Clark and her book, Enemies in Love, A German POW, A Black Nurse, and An Unlikely Romance, from our interview with her in July of 2018. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Talking with Authors. Remember, you can watch all of these interviews online by going to hecmedia.org. Also, be sure to follow us on social media. Just look for Talking with Authors on all social media platforms. And if you haven't done so yet, please rate and review this program wherever you get your podcasts. The host and editor of the video version of this program was Paul Shankman. Supervising producer was Julie Winkle. Photography was by Pete Foggy and Ryan Fitzgerald. Graphics were by Greg Kopp. Family photos were courtesy of Chris Albert. Production support was by Christina Chastain. And HEC Media Executive Director is Dennis Riggs. The Talking with Authors Executive Producer is Christina Chastain. Podcast editors were Paul Langdon and Rod Milam. And I'm Rod Milam, your podcast host. Special thanks to the Goldfarb School of Nursing, Maryville University, and St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Again, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
This is HEC Media.